Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Mummy Brain Revisited. Today, I talk with Dr. Maria Music and Dr. Catherine Rosenblum, who developed the Mum Power Parenting Intervention. I've been a fan of this program and the research on it for a few years now. It's really quite remarkable to see how they developed the program and the impact that it can have on parents as well as on the parental brain. So I hope you enjoy this one. And I also want to add that they were the first to show that a parenting group intervention can positively impact the parental brain. I think this is a pretty big deal. Enjoy.
Soundstripe.
To have you here. Before we jump into Mom Power, maybe tell us a little bit about how you got interested in parenting, actually, and doing some research in it and even developing the program.
Well, I was always interested in exploring how one's own family history impacts who we are, who and how we are. And so with that, I got really interested in like upbringing experiences that might shape how we see ourselves, how we see others. And in that context, these early relationships and the quality of the relationships, particularly with the caregivers, and of course, the family, extended family, but particularly the parents, is very important. And then kind of knowing that, you know, when we have secure, safe, reliable relationships with these early caregivers, that sets us up, you know, stronger and more resilient in life. And then as a psychiatrist by training, working with adult patients, and particularly again with women and men in this perinatal period, so in pregnancy, preconception, pregnancy, and then postpartum, who were challenged by, let's say, depression, anxiety, trauma, PTSD, substance use, I was particularly intrigued to understand and then help. Well, in the context of these challenges, how can I support parents to provide still safe, reliable, strong early bonds with their children to set them up for success? So that's where I started to think, well, parenting, caregiving is very important, and how can I support that both in my clinical day-to-day work, but also in thinking about developing programs and then testing them. Do they work? What works for whom? How does it work best? And more, or actually from the get-go, I was humble enough to understand that it's not me who's coming up with these ideas. I have to ask the parents, what works for you? What do you actually want? And how would that fit for you? Give me your cultural context. That's the other piece, that depending on who you work with, everybody has different backgrounds, you know, values, cultural contexts, and we need to address those and be responsive and respectful. Otherwise, our support is not working. Traditionally, I'm coming from a psychoanalytic background. Being from Vienna, of course, it was like by, you know, almost by breathing the air of Vienna and Freud. But truthfully, I was very intrigued by the theories and all of it. But then I thought like, well, this is very prescriptive. This is very kind of top down, kind of thinking like we have the theory, we have the know-how, what's right and what's wrong. And I just really didn't sit well with me. So more and more, I kind of went, I think, backwards saying, well, I like some of these ideas. I do believe in mental representations and, you know, kind of influences that are maybe unconscious or semi-conscious to us that influence our behaviors, including parenting. But we are not driven by this. We are not determined by this. And in fact, parents know well what works, what doesn't, what they want, what they don't. And we need to hear their voices and use that to create our programs. And with that, I felt much more respectful to the families I work with.
Yeah. And I think that's really powerful to hear, because, you know, parents do know what they need. Often this is a question I ask, like, what do you think would work for you? But I think so often they don't have the confidence to move on those needs. And so I think, or the support to do it. And I think that's really, really powerful, just to get people to really think in terms of coming from the fact that the parent probably knows what they need. You don't have to prescribe them something. You ask them, what do you think would work for you? And you can get a lot of information and then know how to support better.
Yeah.
But that's really powerful. And Kate, for you?
Yeah. So I'm a clinical and a developmental psychologist by training. And also really interested in understanding the factors that really shape early development. And, you know, it was really clear from very early on that the sort of primary force in the life of a young child is the environment that they're in, and that's the early relationships that surround them. And so I'll say that there's sort of an academic reason that I got into it. And then there's the personal. My mom was a midwife. I grew up around babies. My parents were both, I think of them as social justice warriors. They were on the forefronts, really advocating for people. And I could really see how, you know, supporting families is really a social justice issue. And it's also a tremendous opportunity, because when a baby is born, or even as you're beginning to think about having a baby, there is an element of hope, right? There is an element of, this is a new beginning. And for, you know, some parents, if you're lucky, you want to pass on all the wonderful things that you inherited. And for other parents, there may, you know, I think this is maybe more common. There are wonderful things that you want to pass on. And there are things that maybe you're thinking, hey, I'd like to do this differently, right? And maybe you're really struggling, but you see, this is an opportunity that I have to help this person have things that I wished for myself and things that I wish for them. So I have always been really interested in understanding, how do we help support parents so that they, and caregivers, so that they can, you know, really be the parent they want to be and create the opportunities for their children that they hope for their child to have. And in my years working with families in a variety of settings, including families who are really stressed out and really sort of marginalized, and experiencing all different kinds of structural oppression, maybe involvement of child welfare services or other sort of eyes, I have yet to meet a parent who didn't want good things for their child. They want their child to succeed. And so really trying to think, how do we connect with parents, listen to them, and, you know, offer strategies and ways that help them to create that environment. And a big learning lesson that sits alongside what Maria just shared, you know, that, you know, we need to listen to parents, is also that, you know, the parents need the kind of support that we hope they will offer to their child. Mm-hmm. So how do we create a nurturing environment for the parent and one that is hopeful and believes in them, so that they can also do that for their children? Yeah. So that's sort of what got me started.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a great way to think about it. How can we provide the parent with what they want to provide their child? So, So then how did Mom Power start?
Maria, do you want to talk about how the model started? And I can talk a little about the metaphors.
Sure. I think that, as you can see, the tenets of Mom Power, again, is our first flagship, but then, you know, that's kind of the sequel for all the other programmings for other groups, is really based on the ideas, what is, you know, termed infant mental health or early relational health is this idea that you always look at the diet, the parent and the child at the same time, and support both in their nurturing relationship, and that you actually provide for the diet and the parent what you hope that the parent can provide for the child, and that, you know, kind of, it's like circles of holding. That's what the therapist then provide for the parent so that the parent can do it for the child. The supervisor of the therapist provides for the therapist, and society needs to provide for the whole system. So it's kind of these circles of holding. That's the tenet of infant mental health, and also the tenet maybe of attachment theory. Kind of saying, you know, we understand from a developmental perspective what kids and then adults need is both in order to thrive and succeed and develop, they need these strong roots that are relationships that are safe, secure, and loving and nurturing. So that's one of the tenets. That's kind of, you know, if you want, top down, you know, based on evidence, decades of research and literature and maybe our psychodynamic backgrounds. But that kind of having these ideas, then in the real world, in a working in a teenage and young adult primary care clinic, a safety clinic in here in a more challenged community, trying to work with, I saw Kate, myself, and a social worker, Melissa, we've worked in this clinic, and we saw a lot of teen parents coming through, right, with various kinds of challenges and needs, and yet they were like the traditional way of talking with them about parenting just didn't work. They were like, thank you very much. I don't want this. I don't need this. I don't want therapy. I don't want psychiatry, you know. Just leave me alone, because there was so much mistrust and stigma, and you know, psychiatry doesn't have, you know, it's, you're not leading with that. Nobody wants that in some way or the other. So with that, we were starting to think, how can we bring ourselves to the table and be more inviting, more open, more creative, and less strength-based, trauma-informed, but resiliency-oriented, and you know, create this hope and nurture to those parents, so that they can see the value that we can bring to the table as people who are also parents, but also who have some background know-how from our trainings, but without being disrespectful to their experience and saying, we know it all, but listening to them, what do you need from us? And that's where we started to kind of co-develop, I would say, really in an iterative process with those younger adults and teenagers, parents, the program. And we really tried it out back and forth. You know, how long should it be? What should it be called? Is it more psychoed? Is it a class? Because the teenagers, when we said therapy, oh no, thank you very much, I don't want this. But when we said, well, it's like a class with some pearls, and we're going to discussion rounds, we'll talk about what is helpful, what is not. That's how we started slowly kind of to develop and kind of zoom in on what's the best model. After each iteration, we had like a sit down with the participants and then with other community members, and kind of thinking about, what do you think about it? Was this useful? And over, I would say, a process of almost 3 years, we zoomed in on the model that then kind of became Mompower. Mompower was also a terminology or naming that the parents wanted. They liked that. They said, we are like empowered moms. We call it Mompower. Just as a side note, like, for instance, the father program, when we wanted to call it Dad Power, they said, oh no, thank you very much. It's terrible. I don't like this. So they came up with Fraternity of Fathers. And so each time the name is grounded in the ones who are being served, so to speak, they kind of name it also, and then we just take it from there. And so I will speak to one challenge. As you are developing kind of a model that wants the flexibility of being adaptive to the population and the group that you are serving, each group is a little bit different, right? And so you could modify and modify and modify every time. And at some point, you also have to say, well, there are certain structures that are non-modifiable, or these are like the core elements, so that we can also test and do research on it that is grounded in valid methodology, that I know what I'm testing. So at some point, we developed what are the core elements of Mompower that is not changeable, but it's a framework and you can do some modification with every group that you are running. So if we have now groups in rural United States, in Appalachia, it's a little bit different than if you are in an urban, mainly African-American, you know, setting. So there are adaptations that are specific to the group, and then there are core elements that are stable.
Okay. Wow. Okay. And Kate.
Yeah. I think, Maria, that was like such a great summary and sort of where we began in the Teen Health Center and sort of grew the program. And, you know, even some of the things that we mentioned before, they came from moms. So we started off with a class that was more didactic. And one of the moms sort of said, "This is great what you're telling me to do for my child. No one does that for me." And we were like, "Oh," that was something to hear. And so it really got us thinking about how do we create a whole program, not just content telling parents this and that, but how do we create a whole program that really nurtures parents and values their wisdom and supports them, though? Because you know what? Sometimes we say, oh, parents have all the answers, but actually sometimes they don't. I will raise my hand as a parent who does not always have all the answers. And I like support. I don't necessarily like people telling me simple answers, just do this, because it may or may not fit and it may or may not work for all situations. So what we thought is, let's develop a program where we equip parents with tools that they can use to problem solve everyday parenting challenges, but also deliver that in a context of really nurturing them. And so some of those core non-modifiable features that Maria talks about are things like self-care and stress reduction. How do we help parents soothe their nervous system so that they can respond to their child? And we do that by practicing and giving them that experience. We feed them, you know, when we're in person. We, you know, really nurture. We give them time away from their kids to talk with other moms or dads, whatever the group may be. You know, we honor their wisdom by structuring a curriculum that gives them tools to problem solve, and then we help them apply it to life. So, you know, we really, and that's always evolving. More recently, you know, for example, we've really taken seriously, you know, the notion that everything isn't just in the family unit. The environment that the family is in matters a whole lot. So we have sort of our core metaphors, like the tree, which maybe we'll talk about in a minute. But we realized, like, boy, if parents are sort of nurturing the child as sort of this tree that's branching out and learning and growing and exploring new things, but also building strong roots through connection, well, the quality of the soil really matters. The soil is full of toxins, racism, lack of housing, lack of economic opportunity. Like, sure is hard to raise a healthy tree, or if there's a lot of trauma, right? The tree isn't going to blossom and grow fruit, but they need a lot of attention on those roots, right? Building stronger roots to weather the storm. So we're thinking a lot about, you know, what are the things that are in the soil that can be sort of thought of as the toxins, but also what are the nutrients? You know, cultures have practices. families have intergenerational wisdom. How do we also sort of, you know, cultivate the nutrients in the soil to help the family, you know, by strengthening communities, working with community agencies to really build a culture of support for families. So, you know, all of that comes from parents themselves and then our sort of thinking about how do we weave this in? How can we continue to be responsive to what families are telling us? And
Can I just make one addition and kind of maybe bring you on this? You hear that we are talking about a tree. So we have, that was another kind of aspect that at some point we realized, and I think Kate was very instrumental in this, is that when you want to talk about these, some of these concepts that are very, very dear to us, like attachment theory, attachment-based parenting, that was important. We do believe this is our worldview, that that is a useful theory to guide our work. Yet it's so complicated and complex. And we've tried, how could we convey this attachment theory to parents in a digestible and user-friendly manner? And here using nature metaphors like a tree was very useful. And Kate, you might want to talk more about this, because that was a really a mind shift that we also realized we are so connected to nature as humans, and we don't appreciate enough how we are interconnected in this universe, and that nature speaks to us and is evocative. And using the nature metaphors became a core ingredient as well. And that's why it's called Strong Roots Programs. It's all about the roots as a metaphor for relationships, but also as a metaphor of us being rooted in this earth and in this universe. Do you want to talk a little bit more? Because you came actually up with the tree and with that idea.
Sure. So I think you just summarized beautifully why, like, to sort of think about nature. It's very intuitive. And, you know, we know from, actually, we can sort of think about it from our everyday knowing about the world around us. But even like the, you know, affective neuroscience has taught us that, you know, attending to nature, having a tree outside your window, going for a walk, it actually helps move you from sort of concentration where you're working hard and it's sort of depleting your brain to fascination, which is the free flowing sort of attention to things. And it helps you to sort of perform better on tasks because your brain is sort of rejuvenated. So we loved the idea that in rooting in nature, we're also orienting people to their environment in a way that is a constant reminder of what they're learning and thinking about. And, you know, can really nourish the brain in some way. So that was important. But the tree really represents how parents help their children grow and thrive. And all parents typically want their children to be able to branch out and grow and be successful in the world. And so we call that branching out. But the way they do that is they support exploration. And in sort of providing a secure base, when you think about how a branch sort of connects to the tree, if it's a little bit thicker where it connects to the tree, it's a little more stable, a little more secure, right? So the parents are still holding those branching out experiences by helping their kids, enjoying with them, and really attending to them to making sure they're safe. Parents have a role even when their kids are branching out. But if it's only branches, then the tree is vulnerable. Right? When the strong winds blow, if you have shallow roots, tree's going to topple. So the other thing is kids aren't always in happy, great, fabulous spaces. They might feel vulnerable or scared or hurt or just feel a need to connect. And so we call the sort of connection moments an opportunity for building roots. Every time we meet our kids' needs for connection, we build and strengthen the roots. And that sort of creates greater stability for the tree, helps it weather storms and challenges. And, you know, it's this sort of interplay that actually is exactly attachment theory. So attachment theory says there are two behavioral systems, exploration and attachment. And you know, Bowlby, who's the father of attachment theory, said when the exploration system is active, the attachment system can kind of quiet down a little bit. And if there's a danger or a threat from an evolutionary perspective, the attachment needs go up and exploration goes down. Kiddos come into, you know, the caregiver, the parent, that safe haven. So we spend a lot of time thinking with parents about, you know, is this a moment where your child is exploring or needing connection? And then how can you sort of know that? And how can you meet that need, both to support the branching out, but also to build deep and strong roots? Mm-hmm. So the tree became really central. And what we've heard from parents is it makes intuitive sense. They get it. They hold on to it. And we can really use that as a reference through all the rest of the curricula, where we sort of take that tree and apply it to situations and help parents maybe even put a little bit of a pause between reacting to child behavior and instead reflecting for a moment and responding to child behavior, right? A shift from react to respond, where they're sort of, it might be, oh, my child is like driving me crazy. He's doing these things and I'm like so, you know, stressed out and I'm going to yell, which totally understandable. I don't know about you, Jody, but
100% normal. There's times when you're going to yell.
Been there, done that. But it can help if you sort of reflect back on that scenario and think, wait a second, what was going on with him? What was he feeling? What did he need? Oh, he was feeling bad. So that means it's an opportunity for connection. And how could I meet that need? How do I want to respond? And would that help his behavior to sort of improve because his feelings and his needs were met? And of course, we all want that too, right?
Yeah. So. I love this tree metaphor. It's a great one. So, I mean, tell me a bit more about the program itself. It's because you have, you know, I hear that there's a lot of tailoring it to the participants, but there's core things that happen. So is it like, maybe tell us, like, I know it's a group intervention, it goes on for a few weeks. Like, what's the fundamental setup then?
Yeah, so the core components are, just kind of to say that the key components are that it is an attachment-based parenting curriculum. It is based on attachment theory using nature metaphors and then borrowing other kind of ways how to think than using the nature metaphor, like with more kind of structured exercises. It's at the same time, it's not only kind of the didactics, but it's also experiential learning around parenting. So there is also a guided parent-child kind of interaction, observation when we are in person. So with the virtual delivery form, we had to adapt a little bit and do it differently. But we are bringing in also the interactive piece and kind of a guided parent-child interaction piece. That's another component where we support that, where we explore, reflect on it. Another core component is that it's a group meeting. In fact, it actually has 10 group sessions and 3 individual sessions. The group sessions, really, we bank on the power of a group. Moms or dads or the whole family sitting together and reflecting together, experiencing together, that is very powerful and provides really these kind of listening and reflection spaces that they enjoy. And then they can support each other also. They build a social network. But at the same time, we also provide individual sessions to maybe in the beginning, midway, and at the end, both to anticipate what will group be like, what are you wanting to get out of it, to kind of do a little bit of motivational work ahead, what this will be like, midway to check in. How does it work for you? Do you get what you need? Or, you know, what else are you wondering? Or maybe something you want to only share individually without the group context. And then at the end, an exit discussion. What did you get out of it? Where do you want to go next? It's really individualized and tailored. What is your next move and how can we support you? And then another core is the self-care and kind of supporting resilience. So that's what Kate was saying. We each week we practice also some mindfulness, self-care skills, and we offer a kind of a menu of different self-care skills, and folks can practice and then say, well, I like that one, I don't like this one, I'm more kind of tuned into this one. And that's okay, you know, you get a menu, you try it out, you figure it out. But we really emphasize that self-care is so important. And what are some of the kind of skills that you could take away from this group? And then the last one is the opportunity to connect to more services. So connection to care. And that happens, of course, during group time. That happens weekly in between groups. There is a check-in phone call, just kind of to check in by the facilitators with each member. Hey, just reminding you, next week group again. Is there anything you need? So really kind of addressing those tangible needs, checking in on well-being. And if there is an opportunity and a parent says, well, actually, I'm struggling. Now I can tell you I'm struggling with depression, or I have some substance use that I feel problematic, referring them to additional services. So kind of there are these five core elements that each group has to have and is addressed in each group.
Yeah, it sounds like it really sounds amazing. For one, plus you started this when, 20 years ago, 15 years?
We started exploring it like in 2010.
So it's 2009 is what we have written up. So,
but it's like, I mean, because now you hear all this talk about self-care and all these things, but these are things, what, 10 years ago or more, mm-hmm. you already, I mean, we all have known these for some time. Various people, of course, knowing the importance of it, but you really honed in on these five core things, which are still core things.
Yes.
But for some reason, I find they're becoming more popular right now when they, anyway.
I think that's right. No, it's interesting that you say that, because I think when we began, people weren't so familiar or hadn't really had exposure. And I think we do hear now from parents that, you know, they know about some of these things a little bit more. They've heard about it. We do, however, try to build their toolkit, because it turns out there's one thing that works for everyone, right?
Exactly. So this is also what I love, is because it's really giving them opportunity to find what works for them. Also tailoring it. Plus there's this whole support. They don't just go for the week from week to week and arrive at class. You actually are checking in and you're asking what they need. Like, this is huge. So all these different elements are, I mean, it's pretty amazing in a kind of, in a way that, you know, in some sort of, well, it's not therapy, as you said, but like you're putting in all these key elements into a program that really helps to set up parents for positive outcomes.
I love what you're saying, because it's true. I don't think Mom Power is a therapy per se. It's an experience that is a deep, nurturing experience over 3 months, where it's transformative. We have parents who say, this is the first time that I felt that someone cared deeply about me, and that I really was heard, and that I got the help that I needed, whether it was tangible needs, you know, you need a baby seat, you need diapers, or I don't have a ride to come to group. Okay, we help you figure it out how to get to group. Or in the virtual world, I don't even have an iPad or something. How would I connect? Okay, That's what we do now. We give you iPads. We help you to get Wi-Fi so you can join groups. So we are setting up the whole environment so you can do it. And now you can immerse yourself into this learning experience where you, it transforms your worldview on who you are and what you want to be. And it really nurtures and the parents' own self-efficacy, wanting to be the parents that they always wanted to be. Again, I second what Kate said. I have done now psychiatry, perinatal psychiatry, 25 plus years. I have yet to see a parent who says, oh, I want to be a bad parent. I don't want to be the best parent that I can be to my child. It's just that many things come in the way. And we are really trying to create an environment where it can come to light so you can shine. And you get some pointers of theory and practice how to do it. And they can take it, and most of them do, but they can also grapple with it and challenge it. So, for instance, issues around discipline. We are not telling you how to discipline your child or what is the right and the wrong way, or is discipline a taboo or a no-no, but we're talking with you about it. What does it mean to spank? Yeah. What does it mean to yell? How does this fit in the context that we just discussed? And you make your own decisions.
That's very empowering.
That is very
I agree. I will just add, though, Power has been approved as a psychotherapy and is listed on psychotherapy registries. And so I think that what happens is people come in for sort of a parenting group and parenting support. And at the end, they tell us, you know, in the beginning, Maria mentioned, they were like, oh, if you said it was psychotherapy, I never would have signed up. And at the end, they sort of say, hey, wait a second. I think this was kind of like therapy,
you know. You got me.
We are obviously transparent. We don't sort of, think that what you're speaking to, Maria, is the feeling, the experience, that's the focus, something really experiential. And if you hear all of that, what we're doing is we're nurturing the parents' roots and needs for connection. And that allows them to branch out and think about, because they have that security with us, in the experience, they can branch out and try new things. And, you know, at the end, tell us, when we ask them, what was the best thing like that you got out of this? And I think we hear two things really commonly. One is the tree, like that really mattered. And the second is, and this is usually the first, connecting with the other parents, what the other parents had to say. And, you know, as a young early career professional, I might have experienced that a little differently, as like, wait, we have this great curriculum and these great metaphors. And, you know, isn't that the best thing? As a more mature, seasoned person, I can tell you that is like the best thing that you can hope for, because you created an environment that allowed parents to connect in meaningful, real ways about the things that really matter to them. And we call that, you know, sort of connecting with my people is one of our sort of protective factors in growing the forest. And, you know, in forests, the roots interconnect and they stabilize each other. So we're really helping create a space for that. And I think that really matters a lot.
Yeah.
I'll also just add, and I know you're really interested in the research, so maybe we can talk
a little bit. I wanted to ask about the research next. I know, because we could talk a lot about this, and I think this is also, because I have a couple other questions also. But okay, so now tell me about the research, because you set this up, you get positive feedback, you can see results, it's amazing, but I mean, come on, where's the data?
So tell
us a bit about this.
Yeah. And I will let Maria do some of the talking about some of, you know, our, I think some of our really exciting findings. What I will start with is to say, you know, we're both clinicians, we're both parents, and we're both academics. So we're both researchers. So we hold ourselves to a pretty high standard, I would say. There are a lot of models that go out into the world, and it's just sort of like, all right, we have this. And, you know, it might be that it's great, but they didn't necessarily think, oh, we have to demonstrate that it's great first. So we, from,
yeah, yeah. This is so true, right? Because I'm academic first. So I'm like, show me the evidence. Let's see it. But other people are like, but it works. We just throw out this model. That's great. But yeah. So tell me, because I mean, tell us some key findings from intervention.
I'll start with, this group is open to all kinds of parents. There's no internal sort of necessary criteria. You don't have to be depressed. You don't have to have trauma. You don't have to have a parenting challenge. But it turns out when we did our work, we learned that the parents who were signing up for this generally had at least one or multiple of those things, a parent sort of mental health concern and challenges in parenting. And so we really oriented our research to understanding impact in those areas. And then I'll let Maria talk a little bit about the exciting sort of brain imaging findings that we also had sort of. But we were really also interested in, we don't want this to just live in the ivory tower, right? So from the get-go, when we designed our first randomized controlled trial, we had done some pre-post studies and shown some effects in mental health and in parenting and in sort of changing parenting stress levels and how parents think about their experience as parents or their child. We call those mental representations. What we, did is we said, let's do a randomized controlled trial in the community. So we had a community partner who worked with us and we trained their providers in the real world to deliver this. And then we did the evaluation around it. And so that meant that we were really doing kind of a rigorous test because it wasn't just like, oh, in the ivory tower, we can do this, but actually in the real world, this can be delivered in this way. And what we found through those evaluations was reductions in depression, reductions in post-traumatic stress symptoms, really importantly, reductions in parenting stress, which links to some of the brain imaging findings. And then, we also saw enhancements in parenting sense of competence, feeling more competent. We found enhancements in parents, what we call reflective functioning, which really is, I can sort of understand feelings in myself and other as being sort of the things that underlie behavior, and I can tolerate feelings. And it's related to putting that pause button on that I talked before, not just react, but pause and think about what's going on here and respond. And so that's really great. And we saw sort of changes in these mental representations that are related to how you parent and child attachment security. So we knew that this had, intergenerational effect. And then sort of all of that aside, the things that Maria talked about sort of, all the things that families need that aren't just in the family unit, but what resources, we were able to demonstrate that families who went through this were 5 times more likely to connect to community resources. And that we can actually among some of our greatest effects, because we see this as it's a psychotherapy. And for some, it may be enough. For others, we're connecting them to the things that they need, whether it's, resources like job training, food, but also ongoing mental health care, developmental services for their child care. That's tremendous. And so ultimately, Mom Power became a soft, safe entry into care for families who might feel vulnerable or sort of apprehensive about engaging. So that's, I'd say, some of our findings.
I think that's very important what you are saying, Kate, because that is a very key factor. Speaking of the brain research, we were very fortunate that James Swain was at our university, and we really aligned in our interest on thinking about attachment, parenting, and maternal caregiving neural circuits that would underwrite some of these kind of phenomena that we are studying in the therapy, and it was James Swain's and Sean Hole, who is also a bright, you know, psychologist and neuroimager. And with them kind of sitting down and thinking about what is our intervention doing, we asked them, how could we study what we notice of how the intervention is changing the mom's own attributions towards herself and her own efficacy as a parent, and also how it changes her attributions towards the child, making her attributions towards the child less rigid and maybe, you know, judgmental, but more open, flexible, and you know, kind of developmentally grounded, right? Seeing child's behaviors from a more developmental perspective. So how could we measure this perspective taking? What is the way to look at this? That's where they helped us to develop this child face mirror task as one of the kind of the tasks that could be done in the scanner and would basically tap into reflection, perspective taking, empathic attunement, kind of this mentalizing network, but also the salience network. Like, is this important to me? And how important? And we know that this salience network and the mentalizing network are thought of two brain circuits that work together to kind of create the basis for this maternal caregiving network. So this child face mirror task is one where you have either looking at your own child's face or a stranger child, like a veteran child face. And then you have four emotions that are displayed by the face: joyous, distressed, ambiguous, and neutral. And then you have three conditions, so to speak. You just observe. So that's just tapping on your, you know, kind of visual cortex kind of activation. That's the control. And then you have either the react task and the join. The react task is look at this baby face picture with the emotion and kind of put yourself into reacting to what this child might need from you. Like, you basically are in parenting mode. What is asked from me as a parent? And then the last, the join mode, is put yourself into the emotion of that face that you see as if this would be you. Like, you are empathizing with the emotion. And by virtue of empathizing, it becomes like you, right? It's kind of probing in empathy and kind of maybe elicits what we think your own memory traces of, this is me when I was there. And kind of doing these tasks in moms who went through mom power versus those who didn't in a control condition, we basically found, I would say, two main things so far. One, in terms of the salience network, right? Is this important? We saw that before the intervention, the moms, many of them had trauma and depression. And as Kate said, it's transdiagnostic. So it's a lot of stuff that is maybe kind of dampening the salience. And it was particularly visible in when they looked at their own child's joyous face. It was not activating. It's not as if this would not be pulling you for, oh, I'm joining, I'm joyous, because I'm looking at my child who is joyous and smiling at me. It's not as salient. But after the intervention, the moms who did go through mom power, the salience for the joyful face was heightened, whereas the one in the control group stayed low. And so we saw this as, we are basically priming the parent that seeing your child smile at you is activating your own joyousness. It becomes salient and it becomes important, and it's lighting you up. And we saw that the more that joyousness activated the salience network, the more inversely parenting stress in the parent went down after the intervention. So in some way, we could understand this as, well, that makes a lot of sense. We might be stressed, but when our kid looks at us and smiles, it just kind of releases, you know, kind of the stress, because it's so powerful. To loop it also to the mentalizing network, the other piece, what we saw was that in that react mode, so that's the one that is basically probing for the, you are tasked to be a parent and to react to your child's emotion. Again, when the child was in distress, the parent could de-emphasize mentalizing networks that were more self-focused and kind of maybe the preoccupation with their own feeling about themselves, and they could be more oriented towards what does my child need from me in this task. So kind of more child-focused versus self-focused. And we notice again clinically that sometimes parents, when they have a lot on their plate, are very stressed or are burdened by their trauma, and the child sends signals, that the parent almost loses sight of the signals because they are so preoccupied with their own inner world. And then that's why they cannot react. And we feel that we are helping parents to reduce their own self-distress and be more there to really see what the child needs in that moment. So these two findings so far are in the brain, visualizing what we actually see in the clinical.
And I'll just add to that. So beautiful is a summary. And the takeaway for me often is that here we have this brief intervention, and you know, we were the first, actually, I'm kind of proud of that. We were the first as a team to demonstrate functional images in the brain related to a parenting intervention. So
yeah, it's a big deal. It's super cool, for one. I mean, as a parental brain enthusiast and researcher, but it's fascinating because people also always, like, they forget how much therapy itself and groups and social interactions can change your brain, right? And you haven't just hit on that. You're also hitting on taking care of yourself, learning how to be responsive, trusting others. You know, there's all these different elements, and empowerment, right? Like a confidence to do these things. Like, you've hit on lots of different elements in mom power, essentially.
And it's never too late, right? And that's, for me, when I see that brain, it changes your brain. It's never too late. And you're, you know, while we're sort of seeing these changes in the parent's brain, you know, we know that parenting is like a major force in helping to promote brain health and development in their babies. So how profound is that? Relationships affect relationships. Brains affect brains. And it's never too late. You know, we can really see these changes happening.
Yeah, it's really powerful what you've created. And before I go, though, I mean, where can people find these programs or be trained to provide them?
Yeah, so we offer these programs and training in them through a program that Maria and I co-direct at Michigan Medicine at the University of Michigan. And this program is called Zero to Thrive. Okay. And it's possible for people to go to zerotothrive.org and to click on Strong Roots. And you'll see, you know, not only a lot of information about the programs, we have links for folks who want to read the research. So all the publications are listed under the research sort of side, but I think sort of fun and interesting, if anyone's curious, we have three videos on that strong roots page, if you scroll all the way down, the tree, a wandering response wheel and balanced caregiving, they introduce the metaphors in a totally fun and user-friendly way. And people can look at that and learn about it. And if people want to go forward and get trained, the list of dates for training are also on the website. So you can click for upcoming.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, because I didn't know like how broad this goes. Like, do you have it in other countries? People are doing this program internationally?
We have some of that, but also across cultures within the United States as well. So, and we've translated it into Spanish, and we're actually partnering with a team who is going to be using this with NIH funding to tailor it for refugee women in Tijuana on the border. Like, you know, just really exciting things. So, and we even have the videos available in Arabic. We don't have the whole program available, but the videos are available.
To your question, yes, we have trained groups in some in Europe. So in Austria, we have groups in Germany who looked at it. The thing is that we train folks and then, you know, offer partnerships or just say, you know, do the training and use it as you like. Again, we are not prescriptive in terms, I mean, if you want to do and call it mom power and publish on it, sure, you know, you need to use it to fidelity. But otherwise, if you want to do the training and just use some elements for your own work, go and do it. We have people in Australia who are, you know, using it. And I think we're growing, I would say.
I will also say we are a nonprofit. So all of the funds that come into for training go back into supporting that, you know, developing the adaptations, evaluating outcomes. So, you know, our intention is for this to get out to the world. We want this to be available to people. So, and we're excited that you invited us to talk about it. Thank you, Jody.
So excited to have learned more about it. I've always loved it from the very first time I heard Maria speak about it, I think at a conference in Paris. And I was like, this is amazing. And I mean, also Maria, you are amazing because you said you would like to not be needed. I will never forget that. And I was just like, this is really the kind of idea, you know, people should be having in healthcare settings, right? To not be needed, to help people so they can go on their way. So that was very powerful. But I'm really, really happy to hear also that this is expanding, right? Because I know that there's lots of people interested, and me included, in how can we do this, right? And learn skills so that we can assist and help those around us and know this from science-based research that this works, right? And here we can see this, and it's really impactful. So thank you. Thank you for being here with me.
Thank you.
This has been great.
It's been wonderful. And I so appreciate your work.
Questions, comments, suggestions, get in touch at Mommy Brain Revisited on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. You can also contact me on my website at jodipaluski.com. That's JODIPAWLUSKI.com. Looking forward to hearing from you.
stripe.